Oh, hello there.
Three souls escaped from the walls of society by paying with their lives, and one got off scot-free with a ticket to the Twilight Zone.
This is the Utterly Nonsense Podcast, the weekly show where we talk about the latest topics in entertainment, but honestly, really, just the things we feel like talking about, whatever we find interesting. You can find us on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, you know, all the rest, and it'll always be free.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, if you're subscribed already, you probably knew all that already. If you're not subscribed, check us out. We're starting to get a few more viewers, so, you know, it's always nice to reach out to the local YouTube community. But, you know, we're a small channel, so every little bit helps. And with that being said, why don't we jump into some topics?
Yeah, so what do we got going on this week? So I'd say one of the bigger things that we talked about the trailer of a couple weeks back, Twilight Zone, Jordan Peele's new Twilight Zone on CBS Access, the newest reboot, premiered its first two episodes. We had The Comedian and Nightmare at 30,000 Feet.
Okay, so I've only watched The Comedian so far just because I don't have CBS All Access. I know you found some way around it, but I guess we probably shouldn't be talking about that on YouTube, should we? So let's talk about The Comedian since we've both seen that. It's up on YouTube, so anyone in our audience has the potential to watch that. And I'm sure you can find that afterwards if you just search Twilight Zone. I'm sure it's the first thing that comes up. Mm-hmm. So I do want to say it didn't feel like the classic Twilight Zone to me, and I know they're never probably going to be able to capture that exact feel since of how iconic the original series truly was. Jordan Peele, I absolutely love. I've seen Us, I've seen Get Out. I think he's probably the biggest name in horror right now, so to see him in this capacity is kind of cool. My big problem with the first episode was that it completely underused him. Like, I wish he hadn't narrated more. Like, you know, Rod Serling, I always felt, had a more predominant role in Twilight Zone than, I guess, Jordan Peele does by comparison.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you. And I think maybe part of the reason is because the episode was so long. It was around, 50-something minutes that the bookends to it were so spread wide that, like, I almost forgot he was there. And I think I do like him, definitely. But I think he doesn't yet have the same kind of ominous presence that Serling did, and I think that might have something to do with, you know, how the series is filmed. Like, it's not black and white, it's not really noir like the original, I guess. And so, you know, when he appears on screen, I still half expect the joke to come next.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be weird for anyone who knows him strictly from Key and Peele to make that transition with him, because I mean, he's so famous for being just this great comedic voice, along with Keegan-Michael Key.
I have a vivid imagination.
It's like weird to see him if you're not used to Get Out and Us and anything else he's done since the disbanding of Key and Peele. To see him in a role like this is kind of cool.
Yeah. So let's get into the episode itself. So Twilight Zone, when it presents its twists and its strange occurrences, usually finds a way to keep you in mystery about it, at least for a while, to keep the whole reasoning behind, you know, all the weird reactions kind of veiled.
The problem with this one was, in comparison to earlier Twilight Zone episodes, and again, this sort of supports the whole thing that it feels more like a Black Mirror episode than a Twilight Zone episode. And you've seen Black Mirror, right? So you can get that reference.
I've seen clips of it, yeah.
Yeah, so first of all, great show, very much inspired by the original Twilight Zone, except it's way more suspense-driven, it's way more, it's more like if technology went wrong, what happened. It's less pure sci-fi, more just, like, I don't know how else to describe it, really. It's the kind of thing that you have to watch
again. It's less paranormal and more...
It's more based in reality, yeah. Well, so I guess it's a different style of sci-fi, really. Yeah. And those are episodes that each feel like mini movies, since I think most of them are 90 minutes long. There's a couple like 2 hour ones. Bandersnatch was like about 2 hours if you watch it in its entirety. But yeah, so I mean, this first Twilight Zone episode was an hour long, which compared to the original series, which were all half hour episodes, it's definitely a tonal shift. It's definitely taken a different angle than the original series.
Now, I guess we'll get a little bit into spoilers, so if you haven't watched it yet, go do that and then come back to this.
Yeah, just skip like 5 minutes ahead in this video and we'll probably be off there, but...
So the thing I took a little bit of issue with was, which I was getting at before, which was that we know right from the start what's about to happen as soon as he finishes his meeting with the ominous character who is Tracy Morgan in this episode.
Yeah, they say the comedian, or they say the character's name. He's some famous comedian in this world who apparently just disappeared for some reason, which we can get into theories on that for a sec, but I can't remember his name for the life of me.
I think it was... Yeah, I don't remember. But, yeah, so he directly tells him, he says, if you want to get famous, you got to give a part of yourself to the audience, but that once you give it to them, it's theirs, and you can never get it back.
Right.
And it's like, well, you know where we are, the Twilight Zone, so I think I know exactly what's going to happen. And then it does, and it, like, takes him 20 minutes to realize it, and it's like, where are you? Wake up, buddy.
Yes, that was the one weird thing to me, that the audience was well aware of the actual plot of the episode before the main character. Like, usually, what made the Twilight Zone great was you're usually discovering, it's like you can empathize with the character a little more. You can understand, like, their perspective, and you sort of understand what they're going through, and you sort of make the discovery of what's happening at around the same time they do. So this first episode, at least, didn't go in that direction. And I didn't see the second episode, so I couldn't tell you if that followed the same sort of pattern. But
it kind of did, where what causes all of the strange events to occur is, you know, it's very apparent right from the start. And it's almost, you know, it's unexplainable. It's just, it's there, it happens, and it starts the chain of events. And in the end, I feel like the main character, at least in the second episode, wasn't as to blame for what happens as was the first.
Right.
But in the first, one thing I thought they really beat us over the head with was how much they wanted us to know that he is, for sure, unfunny, and that's the reason why he has to use this newfound paranormal ability to just basically talk about anything of his personal life, and then people start laughing hysterically, and whenever he talked about disappears. But like, you could so clearly tell that the writers want you to know he's not funny whatsoever otherwise, and even his quote-unquote funny jokes aren't funny. You know, it's all just a magic thing happening. And, they say he's been a comedian for 5 years. If he really is, why does he always lead with the same line that he knows gets absolutely no reaction? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and I mean, he does that in every single setup, the whole Second Amendment thing, which just... I don't know. It feels like a weird way to set up each punchline, but I guess they're doing that for, like, you know, comedic reasons, the whole rules of three. But, they use it way more than three times. But
I can't tell if they were serious with that or, like, actually try to lampoon modern, at least late night hosts who just talk about politics the same thing night after night and then have it. And I know the audience is like, ha ha ha, but it's really not funny at all.
So I think they were trying to get at the fact that a lot of comedians will hammer these points home without any sort of real point. It's like people have made jokes about the Second Amendment as long as the gun debate's been going on, and there's really not that many fresh takes on it. So, yeah, at least that was my read on it. So I will say, I think, first of all, Tracy Morgan stole the show on this one. Like,
absolutely.
I mean, he nailed it, man. Like, whoever would have thought that Tracy Morgan would be the best part of anything, you know?
Best villain, best bad guy. This little smile he does at the end.
Which, even he, I don't really think is a villain. I think he's just a supernatural force. Or maybe he was like, you know, they lead you to believe that he went through a similar thing that Kumail Nanjiani went through. That, you know, his character had the same ability, but... probably chose stardom instead of, and like lost all of his friends and family rather than
well, he's essentially just the devil.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's the devil per se. I think he was a human character, and he's just like passing on this curse from comedian to comedian for some reason that they just don't really flesh out the motivations on for some reason.
Well, the main point of the story was that in order to get famous, people essentially have to sell their soul. Like, everything that they hold personal eventually gets out in the open, and it becomes collateral damage for, you know, in whatever the ends to their means is. also the other thing that we didn't really see him get that hugely popular. Like, we didn't see him opening for Madison Square Garden or anything really big like that, because he kept saying, I want it all, I want it all. But he's still stuck in this little nightclub.
Yeah. Which, okay, so let me get into some of the problems I had with the episode in terms of the actual plot, like the actual plot holes. And this is like getting into real spoiler territory since this is the very end. So if you hadn't turned away and you still wanted to go into this episode blind, like, now's the real point, because we're really getting into spoiler territory now.
And we'll also talk a little bit about a few Easter eggs. Or just mention them.
Which I think we've been talking about this for over 5 minutes. So those guys are told to skip 5 minutes ahead, skip like five more minutes ahead.
Just keep skipping until you get to the end.
just keep skipping until there's nothing relating to the Twilight Zone on screen. Or if you're listening to this on audio, just
shuffle your playlist.
you're in a little horror of a spot. So first of all, like, Kamal Nanjiani's character, like, by the end of the episode, by the time he figures it out, you know, he does this whole thing where he basically wishes himself away. So why didn't he wish Tracy Morgan's character away?
That's the point I see everyone making in the comments.
Right? Like, okay, so I thought that, like, the second I saw the episode, like, that would have been so easy. Like, he would have survived, he wouldn't have had to sacrifice anything, and essentially nothing would have actually happened. Like, he would have gotten away with it. And it's amazing that the character didn't think of it, since it's such an obvious conclusion.
Yeah. I figured he would have at least tried that, but then nobody would have laughed, because it wouldn't work on him.
Right.
Because that happens a couple times, where he tries something, it doesn't work. Like, he says he meets some kind of neo-Nazi on a bus, and when he talks about it, nobody laughs. And yet, in the same scene, he talks about a couple of hecklers in the audience, and then they disappear. So what constitutes being a part of his life?
I think, first of all, it's because he made up the whole thing about the neo-Nazi. It's like, they don't actually show him referencing the whole murder thing. So because there's no truth to it, it doesn't land with the audience. At least that's the sense I got. And, you know, he also didn't know the neo-Nazi's name, so that probably didn't help either.
So there were a few Easter eggs that you could notice if you're an astute viewer. Right at the beginning, there's a big mural, I guess, of a whole big audience, and some of the faces in there you could see have like the pig face thing from the episode where, you know, the lady's trying to get plastic surgery because she thinks she's ugly, but then everybody's the pig people. There's some from the episode with those people who have to put on those masks. They're like trying to inherit this old guy's fortune,
and they end up ugly.
He says put on these masks, and each of them represents some twisted characteristic that you all hold, and when they take them off, they have these ugly faces. So you can see that there. You can see the dummy from that one episode with the, I guess it was a comedian and a dummy,
right?
And it basically came to life. It was trying to persuade him to do things, kind of like the ventriloquist from Batman.
Gotcha.
So yeah, that's sitting in there.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple things. First of all, I think that whole thing was sort of a reference to The Shining. That whole ending there. You know, them up in the bar, up against the wall, you see the paintings, and it's like he's always been there, because since he never existed, he's always sort of been there, you know?
Right.
So I got that sort of sense from it, just falling in line more with the supernatural elements of the whole thing. The one thing that really bugged me was that Tracy Morgan approached, what's her name? The other comedian, I don't know her name for the life of me. I know they mentioned it. The lesbian.
Yeah. Which, oh yeah, also I thought was odd that she specifically mentioned she's lesbian. Like, it's very in passing and kind of impromptu. Like, nothing prompts her mentioning it.
Yeah, no, it just seems like they tacked that on for some reason. I don't know, it didn't really affect her character in any way. It's just one way of identifying her, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, like right now, there we go, the lesbian.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything else to describe her. Yeah, but it's weird to me that Tracy Morgan approached her, right? Like, she's already a really successful comedian. She's already extremely popular. So, like, what would she have to gain by taking his advice? You know, it's not like she's struggling to get laughs.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But if you notice at the very end, when she's talking to him, and then it cuts to a bit of a further shot, and she's turned to her left, he's not there.
I think I remember that vaguely, but...
And other than that, as far as Easter eggs, there were a couple people in his contacts list, apparently, who are names of characters from previous episodes, which kind of hints that, and in the second episode, they kind of hint that all of these events are or could be part of one connected timeline, I guess, or or world. And I kind of like that. I think that's pretty interesting, because after all, they all are in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the sense I got. And if you watch a lot of the Twilight Zone episodes, it sort of implies that's all happening in this reality and that all these events are happening in the same world and that, you know, I guess the Twilight Zone is just an alternate dimension where all of these things are interconnected.
Dimension between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. Your next stop at the signpost up ahead. All right.
Okay, we've been talking for this long enough.
Yeah. Anyway, that's basically it. So I hope it gets better, and I hope it gets shorter.
And I hope Jordan Peele has more of a presence. Because let's be honest, Jordan Peele's awesome.
So what else do we have? Zack Snyder, in returning to a topic we talked about a while ago, has confirmed, apparently at a some kind of con, was it?
CinemaCon, I believe. Yeah, another one of these conventions that apparently exists.
So he says that the Snyder Cut is in his hands, and it has been, and he has been working on it, and he essentially has it like 90-something percent done, and all that's left is for some CG and soundtrack touch-ups.
Yeah, so that was it in a nutshell. So first of all, I can tell you, the Snyder Cut is something that the fan base of Justice League, the DC fan base, has been super hyped for the longest time. People have been saying it's existed. There's multiple petitions calling for its release.
There's been images slowly being released that hint at it of deleted scenes that were never put on the DVD.
Yeah, so this is great news for the fans. The fact that some form of the Snyder Cut actually exists and will possibly be released to the public.
We knew it was there, and it was exactly as I said, too. I said all of it was filmed, but they just didn't have the visual effects done.
Yeah.
And guess what? I was right.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I called. I knew there would have to be some CG work. I knew there would have to be some touch-ups in the editing room. But, this is a cool thing to read about. This is a cool thing to be reporting about. So the one thing that is a little odd, the movie is set to be over, or this part of the, this version of the movie, is apparently 214 minutes long. So first of all, we've talked about the Justice League a lot. We've talked about Zack Snyder a lot. I think it's not controversial anymore to say that Justice League was sort of a letdown, even if you liked the movie. And I did enjoy the movie for the most part. You have to admit it's sort of a mess of conflicting ideas. The vision of two separate directors in Joss Whedon and Zack Snyder just really didn't work on screen.
The vision of a studio unsure of what the hell it wanted to do.
Yeah, that's what I think it came down to. The CGI really is the thing that bugged me in the third act. It just felt incomplete.
Bugged you. Get it. Parademons. Yeah. Bug-like.
I didn't even make that. Again, I think the whole mustache gate thing, if you want to call it that, with Henry Cavill, that felt rushed, you know?
Worth it. Mission Impossible 5 was great.
It was six. Five... Yeah, what was 5 was Rogue Nation, 4 was Ghost Protocol, 6 was Fallout.
Yes.
And that was awesome. So I don't know if it's worth completely destroying the established continuity of the DC universe, but it was pretty good. So see Mission Impossible Fallout, because Tom Cruise is pretty much good in everything. and Henry Cavill was great in it, so yeah, check him out in that. It suffered from a lot of problems. I wish they'd kept Zack Snyder on, or if they wanted to go the Joss Whedon route, have him direct the entire movie instead of just, some weird moments that just sort of intercut the entire thing and kind of ruined the entire tone of the thing.
I don't know why they didn't go with a two-part idea like they had originally.
Right.
Because that would have made sense. The whole story he had planned was, for Darkseid to show up and for him to turn Superman evil by using the anti-life equation, which essentially all it does is remove your free will.
Right.
In whatever way, it basically breaks down all your beliefs, all of your hopes and dreams, and all of the values you hold dear, and you become susceptible to suggestion, I guess. And then that's what would almost lead to the nightmare scene that we see in BVS. But, of course, in the actual movie, that would be avoided because of, I guess, Flash's intervention or something like that. And we'd see it all come down to a big battle with the Omega Beams.
Yeah, so I mean, I do want to say, I think Zack Snyder is deeply flawed as a filmmaker. I think a lot of his movies, whether you love him or hate him, you have to admit, he has a lot of ideas that are unconventional for the genre.
Yeah, like his comments about Batman killing the other week, like, what was that?
Yeah, no, that like, I don't think anyone in the fan base actually liked that, even the Snyder diehards, but...
I'm fine with Batman cracking a head or two in his day, but... Like, what he said just didn't make sense.
Yeah. No, like, it completely destroyed the character arc. And I think he was, like, talking more about, like, real-life heroes and just trying to apply Batman to that, just trying to add some reality. But even that just felt, like, completely out of context.
He should just stick to recreating paintings on screen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, Watchmen was amazing. The 300 was amazing. Man of Steel, I have mixed thoughts about. BVS, I have mixed thoughts about. Again, BVS, like I've said multiple times, the theatrical cut was pretty much garbage. It didn't really flow at all. The Ultimate Edition was significantly better, in my opinion. And I know you disagree with me on that, that you think the theatrical cut was essentially the same. But as far as I'm concerned, it really helps to flesh out Lex Luthor's motivations, makes him a much more interesting character to watch.
And yeah, no, it
just
does.
Adds to the action of the whole thing.
It's just that when I watched it, I like... felt like I already kind of knew the things it was elaborating on for the most part. But it's good that it added.
I will say, this version of Justice League sounds very similar to the Snyder cut of BVS in that, you know, it might be sort of weird to watch if you're going into it blind, but, you know, it does have a full cohesive vision. Say what you will about Snyder, he has his own way of looking at things. So to really censor him or to really, like, interfere with that vision is, like, you know, it's... Basically trying to, I can't even think of a good analogy for this.
Like, they should have let him just finish the freaking movie, and then if they want to change tone and change direction, then get him out of it after it releases. Don't create all of this controversy that we've seen that's dragged on this long that brought the movie down, brought him down, it brought DC down, WB down. You could have had it, you threw it all away. In the end, it didn't even matter.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the Snyder Cut in a nutshell, and hopefully we see that within our lifetime.
I will say this, I did not buy Justice League on DVD or Blu-ray, because it was crap!
Yeah, I don't think, I haven't bought any of the DC Extended Universe films on DVD, but
I will get the Snyder Cut, if not just out of curiosity.
No, I want to see it, like, you know, even if it has nothing to do with the established DC continuity, I want to see what Snyder's vision turned out to be.
Yeah, like, they worry about, this would be wasted money if we make these DVDs, no one would buy it. Few people bought the original movie anyway, so that should show you, like, yeah, people don't want that. They want to see what the original version of the movie was supposed to be. And there's more of a market for at least just finding that out than there was for this weird Frankenstein amalgamation of bad ideas that was put out. It makes me sad.
I don't know. It's going to be like a Blade Runner situation where we're probably not going to see the director's cut of the film until years after. But,
oh, God. The final director's cut.
Yeah, there's just going to be, like, a million different cuts. There's probably going to be a Whedon cut at some point, let's be honest.
No, thanks. We already saw Avengers.
Yeah.
We already saw Age of Ultron.
Yeah. Honestly, I think Whedon's the kind of guy who's just getting, like, gradually worse with age, too, you know?
Why? With what he puts on Twitter?
Well, I mean, like, I have my own issues with his personal life and some of the things he sends out via Twitter. Some of, like, some of his feminist comments were just absurd. Like, the guy apparently, like, slept around with other women while he was married and claims to be this uber feminist, which seems incredibly contradictory to me.
I mean, he's just trying to put up a little smoke screen.
But, no, I was referring more to, like, just the decline in his movie making. Like, Avengers was okay. I was disappointed when I saw it in theaters, but it's sort of grown on me over time. Age of Ultron, I think, was disappointing. I think most of the Marvel fan base agrees with that.
It was visually and nice.
Just his version of Justice League. Like, the edits that you can clearly tell were his, the scenes you can clearly tell were his, were just, for the most part, unnecessary. I think, like, the one Flash scene that we both... things the best scene of the movie was probably the one redeeming factor. Yeah. But I don't know, Whedon just I think has lost his edge to some extent.
Yeah, probably. Well, anyway, moving on to other DC things, we got the trailer dropped for Joker, which I previously did a reaction video to back in, I think it was like, what, October last year,
right? And you referred to him as an anti-fascist Joker, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, because there was a few leaks from the set in the subway where there seems to be a protest going on and people are holding up signs that say things like anti-fascist, jobs for everyone, down with fascist Wayne or something like that. So they're trying to, I guess, draw parallels with Thomas Wayne, who is alive, which means that there is no Batman in this Joker movie, clearly. Mm-hmm. And parallels with him and Trump, which made me think, like, is this Joker going to be some kind of anti-hero or something of the liberal left?
Yeah, I mean, so, like, I don't want to get too political with this just because we really... But, I mean, we really don't know too much about Joaquin Phoenix's portrayal at this point. We know a little bit about Thomas Wayne, just in that it was Alec Baldwin at one point, actually, the guy playing Thomas Wayne. I'm not sure who they replaced him with, some similar guy, I guess, but just seems like a sort of a... I don't know. It's like the version of Alec Baldwin they could afford. So, I mean, we get a glimpse of Thomas Wayne, and he just seems sort of like, you know, a douchebag industrialist. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, again, we don't even really, it's not explicitly told to the audience that it's Thomas Wayne, but you can sort of infer that pretty easily. And, you know, apparently the kid that he forces to smile, like, through the gate is Bruce Wayne as a kid. So,
interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm interested to see what they do with the whole thing. So I do want to say I love Joaquin Phoenix. I think he's one of the best actors working today. So I'm really anxious to see his take on the Joker to begin with. It looks like an interesting character study. Like, it looks like they're really trying to. And, you know, I know we saw the thing about how they've improvised a lot of it. They've basically rewrote the entire script on set, which could be a good or a bad thing. But, you know, obviously, as a filmmaker, that worries me because it sounds like there's lack of a cohesive vision. But it's also the Joker, who's known for being insane and wanting a multiple choice backstory. So,
and very spontaneous, like sending dead rats to your co-stars and used condoms and the like. Right, Jared Leto?
I could totally see that being like a improvisational thing. Now, look, I don't think anyone will ever be able to top Heath Ledger. I think that was the definitive version of the Joker, but it looks like he's going in a completely different route with this.
Yeah, this, from everything we've seen, doesn't look like it's going to be something where, you know, he has one bad day and is dropped in a vat of acid. This looks more like a gradual nagging of reality around him, just slowly stupid shit, annoying shit. Things that are just weighing him down. And you can see he works as a comedian. Comedian, Twilight Zone. And he's not very successful. And I guess he works as a clown part-time to advertise for stores on the street. And so with that kind of background and then life taking a dump on him daily, it's just eventually he just kind of snaps and decides, you know what? Why feel all depressed when I can just smile and project my pain onto the world around me?
Well, you know, you just got to put on a happy face. Come on, be happy. Okay, so, it does look like an interesting character study. Todd Phillips, who is famous for directing the Hangover trilogy, actually looks like he knows what he's doing this time around. Look, War Dogs was amazing, and people do not give it enough credit. Like, Todd Phillips is actually a really talented director, so I have no doubt that he's going to turn out something really cool. But, you know, it's like they really did showcase his gradual decline into madness. It doesn't look like it's a chemical thing that just automatically turned him into it. It's not the Jack Napier story again.
Yeah, and he's also still known as Arthur Fleck in this. So he's not Jack Napier. He's not Joe Chill. He's not, you know, any of these other names.
You know what I realized the other day, like when we saw the trailer?
What?
Arthur Fleck. A. Fleck. Affleck.
Affleck! Subtle knock at Ben.
Yeah, which, you know, it's a shame we're never going to see them face off. that would have been interesting. But I do want to say, apparently, and again, this is completely leaked, this is completely unconfirmed, but apparently they're casting another Joker for the Birds of Prey movie, and there's going to be, like, flashbacks to when. So I think they're going to go the three Jokers route. Like, I think they're going to bring Joaquin Phoenix in if the Joker solo movie does well enough. And I think they're going to go the three Jokers route. I know I had mentioned that a while back.
Well, we at least know they'd be across different eras because, you know, if this one's around when Thomas Wayne is still kicking.
Yeah, maybe this is the original.
But it's not Jeffrey Dean Morgan Wayne.
Yes, I mean, I guess. I don't know. Maybe Jeffrey Dean Morgan is him. No, wait, that wouldn't make sense with the timeline. Whatever. I guess we can't really think about this too much, can we?
Confuzzled timelines, spinoffs, who knows what's going on?
It's, I mean, DC is already a wreck in the continuity department, so if they wanted to throw it in, I don't think anyone would bat an eye at it, but who knows?
For as many times as they throw around breaches in The Flash, they could easily just breach in anybody at this point.
This could be like a Elseworlds Flashpoint storyline. I know they still want to do the Flashpoint movie, and I know Ezra Miller's busy writing that whole thing, so nice to see that sort of tie-in. Be nice to see how they bring back continuity after that, even though they are focusing on all of the solo and origin stories at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of solo origin stories, another bit of news we got this week was about the Black Widow movie, which has been kind of in development for a long time, but they never really hit the gas on it.
Well, I mean, I think they officially announced that they were making the solo movie about a year back. And, you know, fans have been campaigning for this for a long time. You know, I know we've criticized Captain Marvel a little bit over the past few, don't just show the actual thumbnails at this point, because I know that's going to trigger people, but,
We hate it! We hate it! It's terrible! Women, they're not to be in movies! No!
Yeah, we really didn't. And you can check out our reviews for that. We felt pretty lukewarm about it. We're not going to harp on that anymore, though. So Black Widow, like, first of all, Scarlett Johansson's portrayal of the character is pretty much universally loved. So this is the movie we should have seen. Like, this is the female-led vehicle we should have seen years ago. And it's amazing to me that they're waiting this long to actually make the thing.
Well, we did have Lucy, we had, Ghost in the Shell, and then there was that thing Red Sparrow with Jennifer Lawrence. There was Ocean's, what was it, 8?
8, yeah.
And I'm not sure any of those movies did particularly well where, like, a studio would have invested a lot of money into something like this. But, you know, And now we had Wonder Woman, now we got $1 billion Captain Marvel, so they say, whoa, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do want to say, and before we go into our actual debunking of, the comments we got on some of our previous videos... Captain Marvel did do pretty well at the box office. We'll give it that. It made $1 billion. It's one of the highest grossing Marvel movies today. I think it's the 7th highest grossing. So, you know, good for Captain Marvel. I personally didn't enjoy it. That's pretty much all I'm going to say. Black Widow looks really good. It's shaping up to have a really impressive cast. Like, obviously we don't know anything about it, but,
the news about it was that David Harbour, also known as the new Hellboy, is cast to be in it. As who? I don't know. They're not telling us really names of characters or anything. We just know that he's in it, she's in it, some other chick is in it. I don't know her name. I'll put her on the screen for the clip.
I fully forget what her name is. As far as I could tell, it was just someone to play off of, but I don't remember it being anyone like really noteworthy. David Harbour specifically is noteworthy because at the time we're recording this, Hellboy is coming out a week from, I don't know if it's next week or the week after. It's coming out really soon, though.
I think it's the 17th of April, 14th.
Okay, so it's a couple weeks to go. So David Harbour, in addition to playing, I think the character's name is Hopper in Stranger Things, I've only seen the first season.
Harbour.
And that's gone back a few years, which I really need to watch the second season. I'm like, I've been dying to see it. I don't know why I keep putting it off, but so he's famously playing Hellboy, picking up the role from Ron Perlman. So to see him in a Marvel film is kind of interesting. You know, it's kind of first of all, he's a great actor. He's got the whole grizzled, beaten down, cynical thing going. You know, like that's him. You know, so it's interesting.
Maybe he'll be a Russian mobster.
Yeah, it'd be fun to see what they do with that. Honestly, I'm not sure if Black Widow is going to be a solo, or if it's going to be an origin story, or if it's going to be like years down the line. And you know, we could place our bets now if Black Widow is going to survive Endgame or not.
Will you get the CKGB and Putin in Russia? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to go too political with that, but...
Yeah, definitely not. It's Disney.
Yeah, so, I mean, I do want to say I love Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow. I don't know if there's a lot of storylines they can pick from, or if they're just going to do something completely original.
Maybe they'll explain why she doesn't have a Russian accent anymore.
Well, I think she learned to phase it out. I think they sort of established that early on, that, you know, she is a spy. Her whole goal was to blend in with whatever society she was blending in with. That was my interpretation of it anyway. It'd be cool to see a spy thriller. As far as I know, there's like, I'm sure there's been a Black Widow solo storyline at some point in Marvel Comics. Like, there's pretty much been a solo storyline for every character at some point. But I don't think she ever had a really successful run in the comics, unless I'm like completely spacing out on something. But I don't think there's ever been like a necessary Black Widow comic. It's more just been her as a supporting character of the Avengers, and she's always sort of been that presence.
And she has certainly had a whole host of romances with different main characters, like Hawkeye, not at the Captain America, but I think Punisher at some point, Daredevil, Iron Man.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a rich tapestry of Black Widow. You know, she's been in the comics for so long that I'm sure they could piece something together. But for the life of me, I couldn't name a storyline that she was the most important character in, at least not a really noteworthy one. And again, I could be completely wrong about that, but as far as I know, there's I don't know. I'm going to see it no matter what. So I'm picturing like a Winter Soldier type thing. That's pretty much what I'm getting off of the initial rumors.
Yeah. So we got a whole bunch of comments, probably the most comments we've ever gotten on a video. And coincidentally, the most downvotes. What is the controversy? Well, the controversy, I say, was about Captain Marvel, in that the video's topic was addressing whether everything that was going on the internet had an impact on the ticket sales at all. Because, as we know, it made over $1 billion. And my main question I was putting forth was, could this, all of this argumentation, have drummed up even more attention for people to go see it, whether they liked it or disliked it, regardless of whether the videos they were making were negative or positive, which I believe I do clearly make a point to show towards the beginning of this clip. So people in the comments are calling us man babies and trolls. They're gloating about the movie making $1 billion. They're claiming that the controversy essentially really played no part, that it was just a very small sect of people that talked about it, which, you know, you could be right about. I did think, and I made a point to also say this, that, or at least to show it, that I thought it was kind of weird how there's all these videos saying that, Brie Larson hates men, fuck this movie, or that the movie's, here's why the movie will fail. It's on track, it's going to be a disappointment. Marvel's numbers are going way down because of what she did. And obviously none of that happened. It was all bullshit.
I mean, again, I remember mentioning pretty clearly, and you can watch the video if you didn't see it already. I think I mentioned the first point I said was that I didn't think the controversy would affect the ticket sales in any way, that people would still see the movie because of brand loyalty. You know, again, I personally didn't enjoy the movie. I personally wasn't crazy about it going into it. But, you know, I still was interested to see it despite that. I'm a diehard Marvel fan. So, of course, I wanted to see if it was actually as bad as I was expecting it to be.
Yeah, some of these comments seem to think that we're throwing absolute bombs at this movie when really we gave it a pretty softball here. Like, I think in the review, we gave it a 6 out of 10, which is slightly above average, which is probably about where it stands.
So, I mean, if we're looking at Rotten Tomatoes, which is where this actual controversy, if you want to call it that, started, they're currently at a 59% audience score, which is the lowest of any Marvel film to date. So we're slightly higher than average. There have been a lot of critical reviews that have just been completely destroying the movie. Look, of course there is some sort of controversy. I don't think anyone, aside from a few of the commenters there, can really ignore that. It's just,
Yeah, and even if you think, Rotten Tomatoes, people could post anything, it's just trolls posting negative reviews. Well, you got some people saying when they try to post honest reviews, even if, you know, they're slightly negative, they're getting deleted, so who knows if Rotten Tomatoes' algorithm is actively getting rid of negative criticism. And if you think that a bunch of people can gather and put negative reviews, how do you know people like you, who are flocking to this video somehow, I don't know how you're finding it, aren't just all gathering and upvoting it in mass?
Right.
Like, you know, tit for tat.
Yeah, I mean, we again made a lot of these points in the last video, but I have a feeling that some of the people who commented on the video and downvoted the video didn't actually watch it all the way through, because again, we addressed a lot of this. If we weren't super clear about it, I guess that's on us. But I mean, that's why we're addressing it now. So
yeah, they're also saying that Brie Larson, she just wants more diversity. What'd she do? She said nothing wrong, but. I also said that it's about the way she went about saying it, where is a very clear double standard, if you know what I mean.
I was about to say, yeah, it felt a lot like a double standard that she didn't want any white men interviewing her. Again, like, I'm sure if it were on the other foot, if someone said they didn't want any black people interviewing them, that would be considered extremely racist, and for good reason, because it is.
Yeah, I even said in a previous video, I know what she's getting at, and I understand it. Like,
right.
To some degree, people's perspectives are shaped by their background.
No, it's representation, it's diversity. I fully get that. It's just, you know, she didn't go about saying it in the best way. And for people to call us trolls or man babies, and for people to call everyone who's making this point trolls or man babies, yeah, like, I feel like we have a pretty legitimate criticism here, right? Like, am I completely in the wrong in thinking that, you know, people have a right to be at least a little bit offended by her comments?
Yeah, well, I mean, people take offense to anything they want, but I'm just saying, like, the way she worded it could have been better. I think that's right. The real takeaway.
No, absolutely.
They're also saying that the movie's success had nothing to do with Endgame hype. I know a couple said that it did, and I agree with that. Of course it has something to do with the Endgame hype. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's part of the reason I watched it. You know, I thought it would have
like
some...
Kevin Feige said, this is going to be the big character who joins Endgame. See this movie, because it's the lead-in to it. Like, hello? Wake up.
Yeah.
And I know that the majority of these people are not even watching the whole video, and they're probably not even watching this far, because I looked at the analytics, and the average view time is 3.5 minutes, it's a 10-minute video, and only about 20% actually make it to the end. So, right. I believe that these people are just coming from, I don't know, they're coming on a rampage looking through all of these related videos, like they're just clicking one after another, which, you know, you're trying to argue, these people are trying to argue that there is no campaign to shut down criticism of Captain Marvel. It's all hype. It's all good. We're all enthusiastic here. We're normal people. And yet here you are on a hard-to-find video on a channel with less than 50 subs criticizing us for things we really didn't say and downvoting or, you know, disliking.
Yeah, I mean, it really begs the question as to what these guys have going on in their lives that they feel the need to attack a pretty small channel.
Tell me, guys, were you paid by Disney? Were you? Be honest. I could see right through it. Disney paid them, Disney paid them, yeah!
At the end of the day, you know, people did like this movie. I'm not taking that away from them. If you like the movie, great. I personally didn't. You know, I don't understand why people are getting this worked up about the whole thing.
I didn't watch it. My opinion was solely based on the trailers that I saw and the marketing. That's the only thing I ever really gave a critical editorial on. I said, the trailers look boring to me and the marketing doesn't help. The movie itself I didn't see, so I don't care.
And again, I think the marketing sums it up pretty well. So if you're going based off of that alone, if that's the reason why you didn't see it, that's, you know, probably pretty fair. Yeah, so I think we pretty much about covered this. I think a lot of the people who did criticize our last video on the subject, I really question if all of them actually watched the thing or if they just saw Captain Marvel in controversy and felt the need to just copy and paste a comment that they took from another video or another review site. Because a lot of these do feel like they're not necessarily directed at us, just anyone who had anything negative to say about this movie.
Yeah, and I will say, be mindful of groupthink, be mindful of becoming an NPC. I know that word might trigger some people, but it, you know, it's an apt analogy of people who just kind of mindlessly parrot the same thing from place to place. Just think about what you want to say, and then say it. And there can be a nice discussion. So without further ado, this has been Utterly Nonsense. You can find us on all the places where you can find us. Links are all in the description. I don't know what the rest of the outro is, but I think that pretty much hits the nail on the head. And of course, always remember this when you're listening to this show. It's not news, it's nonsense.
Yeah, so without further ado, 8-bit music, play us out.